Well, good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. It's my pleasure to introduce you to the panel who is going to take us through the topic, Are Capital Markets Open to Shipping? And these are maybe well-known and familiar faces to you, but let me introduce from the far end. It's Jeffrey Piper, Managing Director and Global Head of Maritime with Jefferies. It's Richard Wabu, Partner and Head of the Corporate Finance Activities at Fearnley Securities. It's Carl Fredrik Staubo, who is Head of Shipping at Clarkson Plato Security. And it's Alexander Angeros, Head of the Investment Banking Division of Axia Venture Group. By way of background, we will have noted that clearly the capital markets have been wide open to shipping. And if we recall the graphs presented by Evan during his initial introductory remarks, it could be seen that only since 2013 and till end of September this year, there have been equity transactions in the shipping segment worth $18 billion, although only slightly less than $1 billion raised in 2016. At the same time, it could be seen, if you were quick, that during the same period from January 2013, more than $20 billion have been raised as loan capital through the bond issues in the Oslo and New York markets alone. Even though in 2016 it's only 1.5 billion, or just shy of 1.5 billion, which have been raised in these markets. And I think the earlier panels have shown that there have certainly been a level of activity for good names. There have been follow-on issues. But there seemed to be a perception that the IPO possibilities are now not available, and that it's very difficult for new entrants. At least that is what the industry press keeps reminding us of through numerous headlines. We might want to think, though, that there is a bit nuance to that, and I think that has been evidenced through some of the earlier panels. And it's always worthwhile remembering the statement by L.H. Mencken, who once said that for every complex problem, there is an answer which is clear, simple, and wrong. And we shouldn't really oversimplify, so I trust the panel will take us through some of the issues. But just one of my favorite showings on the YouTube is a very celebrated interview from the 90s with the former Russian president Boris Yeltsin. And as you will recall, Mr. Yeltsin was not always in top form. So the reporter wanted to make it simple. So he said, well, Mr. President, could you please tell us, maybe in one word, how is the situation in Russia these days? And the President Yeltsin paused for a moment, and then he said, good. And the reporter was slightly surprised. So he said, well, that's very interesting, Mr. President. Maybe you could expand, maybe use two words. Not good. Our panelists are in better shape than Mr. Yeltsin, and hopefully we'll get a bit more nuance to everything. So we'll go right into it. We now heard the banker's view on the markets. We heard the legal view from New York. And Alex, what do you think? Who and what are the markets open for these days?
Yeah, thank you all for that. And I think, you know, much like the interview, I think the capital markets are always open. They're always shut for shipping. And what do I mean by that? You know, one has to examine it across different kind of levels and layers here. It's for whom, for what, and at what price, as Robert before us very correctly pointed out. So, you know, throughout the day, we've seen different types of transactions that have taken place. You know, a lot of dry bulk companies that have defensively, so to speak, issued capital, with some exceptions in there. Very few IPOs, and I think that's, you know, a product that's not really you know, available right now for shipping companies. But we've also seen convertibles and other more structured solutions recently, and Jeff, I know, has been involved in at least some of those, so he can talk more about those. So depending on the product you're looking at, the capital markets can be very open, but they're not going to be open for everybody. I think that investors and the capital markets have smartened up a lot. They've become a lot more selective. They've been burned to a large degree as well. So I think the capital markets are only going to be available to the best of companies and for the right structures. And I can't stress that enough. And I think Robert, you know, before us, did a very good job of very methodically walking through some of those issues. I wouldn't underestimate any one of those issues that he brought up, because ultimately, you may be the best of companies, you may be the best of management teams, but if you go to the market with the wrong structure or the wrong idea or the wrong team, then your chances of success, especially in today's environment, diminish. So I think the capital markets, you know, they are open, as I said, selectively. They will always be open selectively, and for selectively, I mean both product-wise and counterparty-wise, but also people have to adjust to pricing expectations that perhaps they weren't used to during the previous cycles, when you know, capital was more flush in capital markets and more available to shipping in capital markets than it is perhaps today. So,
just adding to that, sure. The way we see the markets, we think there are two positions from which companies raise capital or equity capital. And one is from a position of defense, and the other one is a position of offense. And right now, essentially all public entities are trading at a discount to steel value, with some exceptions. So you don't see a lot of offensive moves in the market. It's rather defensive. And if you look at the capital markets activity year to date, it's been mostly defensive raises for dry bulk companies. Lately, it's also been some offensive moves from more yield-oriented companies that are trading at a substantial premium to steel, and that includes Ocean Yield and NAT. Aside from that, all the capital markets activity on the equity side has been equity refills from a defensive position for dry bulk companies, in addition to debt and bond issues that we've also seen quite open after summer with a number of issues. But for us, we would stress the difference between an offensive and a defensive capital markets approach. And it's very difficult to come as a new entrant to market, try to diversify yourself vis-a-vis what's already there, and be able to price above what's already listed. And as everything is trading at a discount, that's the challenge for new entrants today, we think.
Jeff, is this sort of similar to your observation from New York?
Yeah, I think that IPOs are a bellwether to a certain extent, and it is possible that we'll get through, maybe even likely we'll get through this year without an IPO in the U.S., and that'll mean 18 months since the last one, which was Generate Maritime. And it's been quite a while since we've had a whole year, I think 2009. So it does, hearkening on the observation just made about follow-ons, it does tell you that since the IPO window in particular is fickle, there's a benefit to jumping through it when it does open, because it then leaves you in the position, like these existing public companies, of accessing the market for either defense, as we've seen, or in selected cases, offense this year. But you can only do a follow-on if you've done an IPO.
If I may add, I think it's important to see where we are in the cycle. Just a reminder on the investor sentiment in 2008, when dry ships was in $120, they had more liquidity than the largest oil company in Norway, Statoil. Now trading at a dollar, it's no one that wants to invest. There's a couple of fundamental factors we internally stress, and it's, as we heard on the panel earlier today, no bank debt is available. Few orders are being put at the yards. We have recently seen yard capacity being cut. Hyundai, Heavy, Kawasaki is considering whether or not they will continue to build ships. And that is, you know, the supply side will adjust. Remember on a similar conference like this a few years ago, Andreas Fagottis from TÜV and Oceanic used data the last 150 years from the shipping cycle, and he said it was extremely difficult to find, you know, a 3-year cycle, 5-year cycle, etc. But what we are seeing now is we are certainly in a position where supply is adjusting, but what about the long-term fundamental demand? China is the big uncertainty here, and if China continues to grow at a lower pace, of course, I think we are entering a very, very interesting period within the next 6 to 12 months, and I think the market could open relatively quickly. We see movements and of investors, maybe change in type of investors, but new place that are able to take advantage of the low prices. In general, we believe ship asset prices have bottomed out, but it can take some time before seeing real earnings. But again, when that asset price is starting moving, we will see markets open for shipping in general.
Can you put that in writing, Rickard? Asset values have bottomed out. Can I take that home?
For several sectors, yes.
Maybe we'll get back to these potential new investors and new corners of interest. But we noted that Rob said that transportation as a segment is really not on the list of interesting areas for investors in New York. But is it right to say shipping as one bulk, or is there a reason to maybe distinguish between the different types of shipping, like industrial shipping, trading, yielding companies, those kinds of things? And if there is a reason to distinguish, which ones do you think will actually attract more interest in the short term? Richard, maybe you'd have a thought on that.
Well, I guess we've seen a lot of volatility. Rates have come down, you know, last 12 months, either, you know, unchanged or down 90%. For example, VLGCs, ship prices on general is down 20-30%. You add 50-70% leverage on that, then you get the investment universe of shipping. It's volatile. It's difficult now to the investors having difficulties being comfortable on asset prices, and we are below previous bottoms. Scrap value is next data point. So it's hard to get comfortable, especially with the uncertainty in China. But there are some signs of encouraging signs, as mentioned, what we're seeing on the supply side. Demand side is the big question. On sector by sector, I think dry bulk is one of the sectors that have bottomed out. I think you will see a lot more activity on the LNG side. I think the investors, huge investors involved in various companies, will contribute to maybe a bit more focus on consolidation, not consolidation for operational efficiencies, but more than from a financial rationale. So I think there will be consolidation within the sectors. But if I were to choose two sectors, I think dry bulk and LNG will be the first ones to attract new capital.
Yeah, if I could add one thing to that, we often talk about investors, whether it's equity or debt investors, as if they were one group with one set of return criteria. And the answer is there's definitely horses for courses, right? I mean, there are investors who would like the industrial story and would take lower but steadier and less risky return, especially with the dividend attached. And there are other investors that would prefer that the higher risk but higher return you get from the more cyclical story. And so they're all viable investment strategies. But the problem is if you get a mismatch, right? And since we don't have any shipping companies of really big scale with the liquidity that comes with that, and maybe we will eventually, but now if I were to be an investor in a cyclical company, I'd want to be invested in a low enough amount that I have the ability to trade in and trade out. That's the only way you're going to make money in that regard. And the biggest mismatch, you know, comes up all the time. If you think about it, the biggest mismatch we have is some of the biggest investors are PE or hedge fund investors with big positions in the wrong kind of company, the cyclical company, and they can't trade in and trade out. And that's the biggest dilemma we have for in shipping right now. There's nothing wrong with cyclical companies, but I'd rather have $1 million invested than $100 million invested.
I agree with Jeff on this, and I think that's one of the biggest kind of issues that the shipping companies have faced in the capital markets, because really they have not been able to get the scale so they can also build the sophistication and different kind of characteristics that will attract different types of investors. And you know, I don't have the number off the top of my head, but I think if we talk about dry bulk, which I agree is a very interesting sector, but if you add up the market caps of all the dry bulk companies, you probably have a at best, a mid-cap by U.S. standards, probably a micro-cap. So that in and of itself is quite telling about how active institutional investors, at least, can be in this space. Should they differentiate between sectors? Yes. Do they? I think largely no. And, you know, shipping is generally, out of favor with a lot of those guys. It's slowly starting to come back into favor, but I think people have to put forward very convincing cases as to why either the price is very attractive, and we're indeed at lows, not fundamentally in the shipping industry, but in terms of their entry price, or that there is a compelling yield story, which is sustainable, and is not something that a year or 2 years down the line is going to be something that's going to be completely different. And all that has to be combined with enough liquidity so that, as Jeff pointed out, people can trade in and out. You know, most of the hedge funds that have, their names have come up in shipping, they manage more assets than the combined market cap of all shipping companies. So again, size is an issue here, and that's why I keep coming back, conference after conference, panel after panel, to the issue of size and liquidity and governance and everything else.
Do you think maybe there is a local difference here? I think Sveinung Støle pointed to the fact that it was a benefit for Höegh LNG to be both in the Oslo market, listed in Oslo, and to be listed in New York. And Is it possible that there are any sort of local differences and local ways of raising capital and getting access to capital? I mean, Carl Fredrik, you were operating in both markets. Do you have a view?
Yeah, sure. So back to my point earlier about raising money for an offensive move or for a defensive move. Oslo, and especially the Norwegian OTC exchange, has been very efficient to attract growth capital rapidly for interesting market exposures that cannot be obtained similarly in the established listed environment. Right now, it's less of those, call it unique opportunities, that people are trying to capture, and people are more concerned about maintaining and defending the position they already have in existing entities. So as a direct result of that, you see a lot less activity on the Norwegian exchanges and more activity in the U.S. generally, because it's more listed companies in the U.S. Within the shipping space. So that's sort of from an exchange point of view. Looking at the investors, it's quite different. Norway and Greece has a long tradition in shipping, and I think are more accustomed to investing in the cyclicality and less focused on cash flow compared to their U.S. peers. So if you look at the latest deals, even deals that are done in the U.S., which are typically equity refills for dry bulk companies, you see a lot of Scandinavian and particularly Norwegian demand in the equity for these companies. So summarizing, right now we see more capital markets activity within shipping in the U.S., but a lot of it is consumed by Scandinavian investors. And that's an interesting dynamic, we think.
And if I may add to what you're saying, I think what we used to see when there was a lot more issuance in Oslo, you had a lot of the U.S. investors that were showing up in a lot of those deals as well. So Ultimately, I think, the investors, if they find a good opportunity that's structured properly, that's attractively priced, whether it's in Oslo, the US, London, or wherever else, if the opportunity itself is attractive, they are quite likely to participate. The one thing that differentiated, I think, Oslo in the past, and in the context of offensive moves, as you put it very correctly, is a timetable to completion and to execution, which in the context of a highly volatile industry can make a huge difference. If you can get ready in a month versus 6 months, that can mean you're at a different point in the cycle. But ultimately, I think it comes down to deal structure, who the sponsor behind the deal is, and the investors will follow. I mean, all of these investors are global investors, and they can invest across the board.
Yeah, and
Asia, Europe, or the U.S.
This comes up so often in panels that talk about Norway versus the U.S. I have a favor to ask Rickard and Carl Frederick, which is, please do, as you have, do your due diligence and structure your deals well, because the reason that we have so much regulation in the U.S. is because we've had lots of bad examples, not so much in shipping, but in the other capitals markets of fraud and other, you know, bad deals. So we have this massive regulatory system to prevent it. So that's the ticket to admission. And in Norway, the track record is pretty clean. So, you know, they haven't had one go tapioca yet. So please don't underwrite anyone that's going to go bad on us, okay? Because so, I assure you the Norwegian regulators will change their rules immediately after the first really bad deal.
At the end of the day, it's all to the same investors that have the focus on this as well. So it's not like, first off, we wouldn't engage in any business like that, obviously. But secondly, you wouldn't be able to sell it. So.
Well, another risk, which I guess has come more to the forefront and which could potentially affect investor interest in the capital markets, is, of course, the counterparty risk. And what do you think? Are there any implications from the Yard bankruptcies, from a major bankruptcy like Hanjin and other players who've run into financial difficulties? How does that play into the capital markets appetite?
It plays in from the top down, right? I mean, shipping doesn't really get to the front page of the financial journals in the U.S. with any good news. You know, there weren't front page news stories about record VLCC rates in 2004 and 2008. But as soon as we have the possibility of not getting all of our Christmas presents on a box from on a Hanjin ship, you know, to the store, to the Walmart store in time, it's, oh my God, what's going on with shipping? So, you know, it doesn't help if people are asking, you know, they can't even pronounce the name usually, but, you know, what's this shipping company I'm reading about? So it does hurt a little bit when we're struggling along with the energy sector to get back into the capital markets after getting knocked for a loop by commodity prices and lack of commodity demand in certain cases to have a case like this. So it hurts a little bit, but we'll get by it. I think the bigger picture, as you say, is it's generally been treated as, you know, if you have a long-term charter from an oil major or from a big liner company, that's solid, right? So if the credit of the company, of the shipping company that's chartering in or dealing business with those guys is dependent on that, that's up until now been, you know, considered pretty much money good. And I think now everyone's going to reconsider whether long-term charters are money good, either from a renegotiation stance, which is happening, or from a bankruptcy risk. So I think it does change the picture a little bit.
If I could add, short-term, I believe this will have a huge impact on the container sector, with its competitors, you know, gaining a lot of volumes and rates. And credit is something which has been highly focused on even since 2008, basically. You see it in all sectors. Drawbook, for example, which used to be, you know, everyone had access to everyone. And right now, it's credit orientation and credit policy is extremely important. And the big cargo providers are very, very focused on the credit to the counterparts.
And we think that it also supports a drive towards larger entities and somewhat of a market consolidation. And this was also very much reflected in one of the earlier panels, where there are only a few existing large entities that are eligible to get bank financing. And we think the same goes over time for equity as well. And at the end of the day, focused on larger, more solid companies and obviously increased focus on counterparts for TCs and bareboats.
One other element which sometimes is being raised with respect to investments into shipping is, of course, the corporate governance and transparency and alignment of interest point. And that was clearly touched upon by Rob. I think it was touched upon in one of the earlier panels as well. And it's maybe an area where the shipping industry comes from a rather perceived as a poor starting point, but where things may be cleaning up. But Alex, do you have a thought on that? Is that really relevant and of increasing interest?
I think it's absolutely relevant. I think there's no way, you know, of getting around proper governance. And I think that for, you know, people may get away with it for a certain amount of time. I think people have gotten away with it for much longer than at least I have expected. But I think that, you know, now that we do have a population of companies already listed for the next potential or prospective entrant into the public market, I think a lot of focus is going to be placed on corporate governance and on how the company is set up. Investors are not going to put up with, you know, opaque or shady setups. You know, Jeff mentioned the last IPO was probably 18 months ago. I think every single investor that, you know, looked at that IPO kind of started from the governance point of view and the industry fundamentals. So I think we've gotten to the point where there's no, you know, more hiding, you know, in the shadows and kind of turning a blind eye to governance. And I think that the people that do have proper governance, do have the proper checks and balances and controls and talent within their team are going to be able to be successful long term. And by successful, it's not just pulling off an IPO. It's, you know, being successfully public, it's raising more equity, raising different types of capital, growing the company, and generating returns for all your stakeholders. And all of those things have to come into the equation in an otherwise very simplistic approach to capital markets from the shipping industry thus far.
I know we're running out of time. Is there any questions from the audience? Of course, just raise your hand. But in the meantime, we heard from the banking panel that availability of bank finance is not going to improve. There was some skepticism as to the long-term perspective of private equity. There are enormous funding requirements in the industry going forward. Do you have any expectation as to how sort of the investor universe will develop, and will we know that there are in fact institutional or other players there who will continue to support the industry?
You know, we've been asking this question since 2008, but I think it's the question is becoming acute, I think, finally, here 8 years later, when there is, you know, just think of just RBS alone, $20 billion less capital in to shipping, and then multiply that by all the other commercial banks, and you see there must be a gap. And so where are we going to find it? I like to say that think of the global capital markets, the U.S. being the largest, but Eurobonds, Norway, all the rest as being, you know, sand on a vast beach, just as far as the eye can see. And in the middle of that beach, there's a sandbox with instead of brown sand, it's pink sand. It's nice, pretty pink sand. It's called loans for banks from shipping banks, right? It's different. It's better. It's cheaper. But it's only inside that sandbox, and the sandbox is getting smaller. So we're going to have to find some other sand, and it's going to come from the bond. It's going to come from the ECAs. It's going to come from Chinese leasing. It's going to come from new startups that they're financing themselves with 10% money, so they'll only be able to lend at 12%. But it's also going to come from the capital markets. And you know, I think we'll have to structure the deals right, as Alex has mentioned and others here. But I do think that eventually the capital markets are going to be a little more expensive than that pretty pink sand. But I think we'll be part of the solution.
And I think if you think about it, I mean, if we think very simplistically, shipping is not going away anytime soon. If you think about the service that's provided by shipping companies in the context of the global economy, there's no efficient substitute for that. And shipping is a very capital intensive industry. So that capital is going to have to find its way into shipping. So it's a matter of finding an equilibrium as to the right type of capital and the right cost of that capital, and whether that's through the capital markets, private equity, hedge funds, ECAs, or otherwise, that capital is going to find its way into shipping. It's probably going to be at different terms than what it used to be. I think that's a very safe assumption, but I don't think that you know, we're going to have, over a prolonged period, absence of that capital and that capital gap persisting. I think pretty soon we're going to have to find, and we will find, an equilibrium, and capital will flow into this industry.
And if we do have a look, as the final topic, looking forward in light of what has been going on, in light of the pretty dire description that we've heard throughout today as to the capital markets, what do you think will be the direction and the type of activity going forward? What can be expected? Carl Fredrik?
Yeah, I think we've already seen a lot of rescue equity in dry bulk. Now that rates across the other shipping segments are, you know, reflecting the same pattern that we saw in dry bulk, it's likely that we will see similar exercises across other segments if they continue to stay as weak as dry bulk has for a prolonged period of time. So that's I guess the not so optimistic part. However, as Rickard mentioned earlier, things are getting very cheap, 30, 35 year low values, and in some instances all time lows. Just from a value perspective, there is a lot of very interesting opportunities, both from just a plain steel value and also the fact that most of the public entities trades at a discount. So I do think that we will start to see some more opportunistic races. And then to start, I think dry and LNG is a good place to focus. The good thing is that no one is wanting to finance new builds, or at least new building orders. So it will be focused on existing tonnage, which is obviously good for the industry. Also, we've seen after summer quite an active DCM market. We've had issues this year by Gaslog, Stolt-Nielsen, Odfjell, Ocean Yield, and so forth. And a lot of those have seen substantial demand and are some of them priced very attractively. So we do expect more DCM activity within this year. And I think across the panel there is a few things in the cards that should be coming to market within this year.
Yeah, good. And if Jeff, you want to comment?
I think that's a perfect chance for me to say that I think the ship finance deal that you were also involved with last week was a good example of, on the debt side. I know we're going over time, but if you think about it, equity is all about story. If you went all the way to the other side to, say, shipping bank loans, it's mostly, or asset-backed loans, certainly it's mostly about credit. And equity story is a little tough right now in shipping, right? But if you can craft a good credit story with credit case with a story attached, you know, that's when you can get the convert market or the bond market to do something for the right kind of shipping company today. So that's right. I
good.
Agree with
the time, Frederick. The timekeeper is sending red flashes. I think we'll leave it at that on a slightly positive note. So thanks to the panelists.
Cheers.